From Dallas to Joburg, it's Cooler on 919.
Joining us on 919 this afternoon is Dom Pitot, who calls himself the Texan Sapper. I feel like he's stolen my catchphrase there. He's also a serial entrepreneur, chief mad scientist slash founder at Joyforge Labs. And Dom is a software engineer turned business developer. He's got this huge passion for helping businesses grow, helping South African businesses grow in the USA. And very interestingly, he's the host of a podcast called the Silicon Springbok podcast, where he shares some of the stories of South Africa's toughest entrepreneurs. I thought this would be a really fascinating guest to have on the show this afternoon. So Dom, welcome to 919.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Well, you grew up on a tiny farm in rural KwaZulu-Natal. How did you end up in Houston, Texas?
Yeah, that's a great story. I suppose it's got a lot to do with my parents were always very entrepreneurial. They were on the farm because they were not the normal type of parents. They wanted us to have a different kind of upbringing. My parents were not farmers, really. My dad was sort of an accountant, and my mother was the one who did all sorts of things. And on the farm, we built, I suppose, many, many small businesses. So I learned to see how all of that happened over the years. But also, I got the opportunity to eventually go and study overseas. My parents were very poor, by the way, so like not no money for all of these things. But I was very fortunate, I suppose, to get scholarships, but partially because they were always pushing me to think differently, you know, go the extra mile, do different things. And that's always served me very well when looking for adventures, you know, go on the next adventure, try the next thing. So that's how I ended up basically started going overseas. I studied overseas after I did my undergrad. I did a postgrad in the UK. But yeah, the story there is, just, you know, I've lived in, since that, in Germany, I've lived in China.
Oh, wow.
I've spent some time in Brazil. I've traveled to over 45 countries. But I've gone back to South Africa multiple times. At the moment, yeah, I'm living in Houston. Mm-hmm. This is the most recent chapter in the story.
How long have you been in Houston now?
Only 18 months. Okay. Stuff for me to claim that I'm the Texan Sapper. I know there's a lot of Sappers in Texas who are like, oh, I thought you've been here for like 20 years. 18 months. Sorry, man. I did claim the name a little bit tongue in cheek, but it stuck. And I definitely do feel that there's this really interesting connection between Texas and South Africa. I do think that there's a great opportunity for South Africans who want to do business in Texas, not necessarily move here, but it's a really interesting part of the US to think about and focus on. So, you know, I've spent the last 6 months talking to a lot of people about my experiences here. Yeah, and hence the name, the Texan Sapper.
I like it. Well, yes, you mentioned you've spent the last few months speaking to all these businesses. You've had over 100 consultation sessions with South African businesses this year alone, wanting to do some kind of niche business in the USA. I've read that so far you have saved them millions of rands in wasted resources because some of these entrepreneurs struggle to find their hyper niche in the US market. Do you want to unpack that a little bit for us and share a little bit about the kinds of businesses that have been contacting you, the kinds of services that you offer to them after these consultation sessions?
Yeah, the story is also partly my own, right? I was running a business in South Africa, which was focused on South African clients, competing against international companies. And we started to do really well with especially one of our products. And the question became, well, we are going to run out of market in South Africa eventually. It's too small and we need to start going overseas. And that's the problem that most of these businesses are in. They're fairly successful locally. They've scraped, done incredible things, you know, worked through a very, very tough local market to build something quite useful and successful. And now they're looking to what's the expansion opportunities. And it's not that simple because often what you've done in South Africa to be able to succeed is not solve one problem for one type of client. You've ended up making a product that's very flexible or having five products that you can, you know, pull off the shelf depending on who you're speaking to and you mix them together. And so South African businesses are generally having to be very diverse in what they do just because the market is small.
Right.
If you want to work for one of the big players, you know, a big insurance company or a big bank, if they ask you, hey, I like your product, but can it do this as well? You always say yes because You got to win that business. And so
you figure out how afterwards.
Exactly. So you become this, you know, jack of all trades, a Swiss Army knife type of business. That just doesn't work, unfortunately, in a place like the US for a number of reasons. And that's a hard lesson for most of these companies to learn, to figure out that your skills and capabilities in South Africa are actually world-class, very good. And your software that you've built is probably amazing. But it doesn't fit a need well enough in this international space. It normally has to be pared down, like really taking what you've done and cut it down by like 90% sometimes, and only focus on the 10% that is really what a customer in the US market would like. And even when you talk about the US market, it's the same as saying like the African market. It's kind of crazy. You would never be able to sell to everybody in Africa. Sure. You could never enter the African market. It's a kind of ridiculous thing. But people do think of that at the US. Mm-hmm. Not only is it 50 states, but it's hundreds of cities. And within those cities, you know, there's millions of people. Just where I live in Houston, I've tried to calculate it, but basically the GDP of Houston is almost the same as that of South Africa.
It's wild. So yeah, we've even Houston, Dallas too. Yeah, it's big. Insane.
Yeah. Oh, Dallas even bigger. Yeah. And if you're going to say, oh, I'm going to enter the Dallas market, now you're starting to narrow down a little bit. But at the end of the day, Dallas market is still too big. You're going to have to go even more niche than that. You're going to really have to find, like, I'm only going to deal with, I use this example. It was a guy I was speaking to about, he makes specialist shoes. But, you know, if you're going to sell shoes to chiropractors in Dallas, you're still going to have like a few thousand people you're probably going to talk to. That's too many. You can't get the opinion of 1,000 people. You're going to have to pare that market down to like 100 so that if you speak to 20, you're actually getting a representative part of the market because your product is not going to suit them. You're going to have to adapt it. You're going to have to figure things out and change it so it suits the local needs. And this is what basically kills most businesses. They never, ever do this adaptation. They start off with something broad. They go for a broad market. And when I'm talking to them, 2 years into that process, 3 years into that process, they've already spent millions and have got nowhere.
Do you find that the way that South Africans are accustomed to doing business can sometimes also impede the way that they do business in the USA? I know entering the corporate market for me when we first moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I was a lot more reserved and I wasn't used to a more aggressive approach when it came to interviews sometimes. Have you found a similar thing with people wanting to enter the business market in specific states?
I agree that culturally they're a lot more direct. I think if you're used to from South Africa dealing, let's say, with people out of the UK, you're very polite. Americans aren't very polite. They tell you straight away, hey, I don't like your product. It's not for me. Thanks very much. Goodbye. Or what you also do is, you know, when can I have it? There's not this long RFP process and huge, you know, time taken to think about it and so forth. I find them also to be very, very clear about what they want. Mm-hmm. And when what you have fits what they want, they tell you straight away, which is wonderful. Huge market. If you can crack it, you can get incredibly wealthy because a lot of money being thrown at specific problem spaces. But if you don't have it, it's very brutal. Yeah. Every person is just telling you straightforward, no, I'm not interested. No, thank you. No, just ignoring you, basically.
Yeah.
That is, I find, quite hard. But in the beginning of a business, when you're trying to figure out what to offer, that's kind of brilliant because it's much worse. I've tried in other countries where people are very polite. Like I tried in Mexico initially. Mm-hmm. And everybody says yes. Oh, wonderful. Oh, I love this. Yes, great. And then you say, well, what's the next steps for you guys to buy it? And they're like, well, we're going to have to present this internally to other managers. Okay. When's that going to happen? Oh, we'll let you know. And then you follow up a few weeks later and they still haven't moved anywhere. And they are like, yes, love it. A year later, nothing's happened. Mm-hmm. You realize, okay, the yes is a no. That's unfortunately the reality. And for you as a small business trying to enter a market, that's death, right? You don't have the time to keep investing and not make any revenue. You need somebody to tell you why your product isn't what they want. And that's where the US is a lot easier in that sense. People give you that feedback very quickly. Oh, no, I don't like it. Why? Because your competitor product does this and this and that. Or they just ignore you. If they're ignoring you, it means you're not even close to dealing with a problem that they really have.
Yeah.
Your targeting is completely off. So I found that to be wonderful. And the other thing I think we struggle with as South Africans is we don't really know about networking. Not in the way that it's done here in the US. Mm-hmm. Everything is sold through a network. In my world, which is the B2B space, you can only really get meetings and get anywhere if somebody introduces you to that person. The fact is, though, that people are very willing to share their network. So if you get to know some people and you say, look, I would love to get a meeting with such and such a company or in this industry, they're very willing to say, oh, I know John. John, I think, is well connected in that space. And you go and talk to John and John says, oh, yeah, I know Peter. He's in that business. He's a little bit closer to what you need. And then he introduces you to Peter and Peter will have a meeting with you because John introduced you. But you don't know John. John was introduced to you by one of your people who know you. So you kind of do this monkey bars effect through the market, impressing each person as you go, explaining what you do, and then they'll get you the meeting with the right person. So I found that that's also something I didn't value enough when I first started. And that's another approach I think South Africans want to go very quickly to pitching to the end guy and not thinking about, okay, cool, but what's the network? How do I gain credibility? You know, who's influential in this space? How do I get in front of them and how do I get them to be my ally and help introduce me to people in this market? So, yeah, I do think that sometimes are a very straightforward approach in South Africa to companies, but also then expecting it to be some sort of procurement process that happens. I haven't seen that here. Basically, speak to the decision maker if you can get it in front of them through your network, and they make the call very quickly. You know, within 5 minutes of meeting, they will normally have told you, no, I'm not interested. And if you've made it past that, then you probably got a chance of selling into that company. And I'm speaking mostly about mid-sized businesses. Obviously, if you go and want to sell to Amazon, Walmart, and so forth, that's different. That's very large companies. There are big processes in place there. But mid-sized companies in the US are really where the opportunity is at. And those companies are much larger than South African listed corporates. So you're not looking at small businesses. When I say medium-sized, they're typically doing, you know, $250 million to $2 billion in turnover. And these are medium-sized companies you would never have heard of. You know, $1 billion in turnover, 20 billion rand, it'd be one of the biggest companies on South African Stock Exchange.
So that's part one of my interview with Dom Pitou, who is the founder of Joyforge Labs. And if you're wanting to find out more about testing a business without much funding, you don't want to miss out on part two of my interview with Dom. That happens in the next hour on 919. It's the Stateside Connection, where we bridge the gap between South Africa and South Africans living abroad. Dom Pitou, our guest for this week, very passionate about helping South African businesses find their hyper niche in the USA. We're back to the music now this Saturday afternoon with Patti Smith and Because the Night.